Good morning, everyone. It's nice to see you. Got a few people out in the audience here that are freezing cold. And welcome all you viewers from home, wherever you're at, whatever you're doing. I know some people tune in from different countries even, so that's really nice. Hello to everyone. So let's take a minute now to settle in for our meditation. Get yourself nice and comfortable, and you can do that any way that you'd like to meditate, preferably sitting with your spine up nice and tall as if it were a receiving antenna. And then gently close your eyes and notice right away today, when you close your eyes, how everything changes. It seems like such an obvious thing to say, but really, where have you gone? So we let the attention now filter from our thinking mind and our outward looking and hearing, and we start to let it come inward, and specifically right down into the heart area. And now just imagine that you had little eyes and ears in your heart, different from your physical ones, but seeing and hearing. And then notice what that does to your awareness of your physical body. Does it help you relax, let go a little bit? Feel the tension drain out of your shoulders, out of your hips, and into the earth. And then begin to cultivate the awareness of a lighter energy within you. Energy that is beyond the physical. And come into the heart this way. Can you feel yourself as a vibration? And so with each breath now, imagine cultivating that vibration to greater depths in all directions. And can you feel an expansiveness now? Within and also surrounding you, encapsulating you in a perfect sphere of divine love. Notice now that your body has become very light, and your mind has become very empty. And your breath has become very open and expansive. And now bring that beautiful heart energy on purpose right up into your mind. And then, as if there were a portal right at your third eye, imagine that portal open. And become aware of your eternal nature. Let the body disappear and remain here in blissful communion. And then once again, we let the energy of life fill us from the mind into the heart, and from the heart into all the senses, into the fingertips and the toes. Feel your life unfurl as your physical beingness. And when you're ready, gently open up your eyes and come back present to the space. Take a nice deep breath in and a pleasant exhale. Thank you for that beautiful song. It's just so funny. Every Sunday I have a new realization about what we do here in service and what music is and what meditation is and what for, and what I realized this morning is that it's a timeless thing that happens. When we're doing that song, we're just immersed in it together, and there's this timeless quality that my soul loves, but my little thinking mind sometimes says, let's get on with things. You know what I mean? So the music helps me to be centered in that timelessness. Yep. And so thank you very much for that always. And thank you at home listening to service today. You know, with that thought of timelessness and sort of, I don't know, the word often comes to me when I'm about to give a talk about inadequacy. And especially today, talking about divine love, it's like, I just honestly just feel so inadequate with it. And the reason is because it's stuff that's beyond words, yet I'm going to talk about it for 20 minutes, you know, or whatever. And it's just so bizarre to me. And so as this talk has sort of taken shape over these last couple of days, and really a lifetime, I have that thought that I come here, I'm like, I've got a few things written down, and they're ideas and thoughts and people's entire lives that have devoted themselves to sharing divine love. And even, you know, sometimes I want to say teaching, but it's even beyond teaching. It is absolutely an embodiment that these people bring. And some of the people I'm going to share with you today, Jesus, you know, Mother Mary, Mary Magdalene, quotes from the Bible, from the Bhagavad Gita. These things, they're not just quotes that came out of nowhere. They're writings that came out of somebody's entire life devoted to divine love. So it's fun for me because I get to come here, and then I have this talk, and the musicians don't know what the talk is, and then they have the song, There's Only Love. And so I get to go, yeah, that's the whole thing. There's only love. But we are human beings in a human body. We can feel coldness right now here in the sanctuary, and our fingers are cold. We can feel warmth. We can feel the warmth of the sun. In our physicalness, we get to feel all these things. And so divine love always, it incorporates that feeling nature, but it transcends it. There's another person I want to share with you today, Martin Luther King Jr., who the Centers for Action and Contemplation, Richard Rohr's place, they reminded me of this notion about divine love through Martin Luther King, and he had a talk called Loving Your Enemies. And in that talk, I have a little excerpt I want to share. He quotes 1 Matthew in chapter 5, and he says, "You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy." Old Testament stuff. But Jesus says, "I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you." This is pertinent in today's world, don't you think? How do I love my enemies and pray even for those who want to do me harm, want to do me wrong, don't agree with me? What does Martin Luther King say? "When I speak of love, I am not speaking of some sentimental and weak response. I'm speaking of that force which all of the great religions have seen as the supreme unifying principle of life. Love is somehow the key that unlocks the door which leads to ultimate reality." Wow. Love is the key that unlocks the door that leads to our ultimate truth. When Jesus bids us to love our enemies, he's speaking of neither eros, which is romantic love, nor philia, which is pretty much reciprocal love of friends, of one another. But he is speaking of agape, understanding and creative, redemptive goodwill for all people. And it does say all people. And that's what he's talking about with this love your enemies thing. All people, even the guy that really I don't like because he's loud and obnoxious, or even a person that perpetuates genocide. Atrocious things have happened on our planet. Is he telling us that I have to love that guy? Only by following this way and responding with this type of love are we able to be children of our Father who is in heaven. Maybe that's why people don't like religion, because that's the message. Sometimes I've been in, when I first started coming around Unity, You know, it was interesting because I went to some different churches before that, and I always loved every church that I was at because I loved the people. Sometimes I didn't love the message, but it was always inviting me to look at something within myself. And so as I came around Unity Church more, and being with Bob was an interesting thing, and many of you might remember how many times I would go up to Bob and tell him, oh, what you said about such and such was so cool. And later I found out he never said that. But that's what I heard. And he likes to talk about that today, how many times people had said to him about what he said, but he didn't say. Because we hear based on what we believe to be true about ourselves and about life. So what I don't like hearing, what I don't like hearing in a church service, I have come to learn for me, is what I don't like about myself. And that's pretty harsh. So this agape love, and many of us have heard about agape love. And so I looked it up, and on the internet, which is sometimes a reliable source and sometimes not, I said, what does agape love mean? And it said, unconditional love. Well, that's easy. The highest form of love, it says, charity. Charity's tricky, and we're going to get to that in a minute. But I like this last thing it said. It's the love originating from God or from Christ for humankind. And that's a key point in this information today, that there's this love that emanates from the heart of the divine and calls us somewhere. And when we align with that love, that is what I believe to be agape love. That word charity, I thought, charity, what does that mean? So I began to look in Unity's old writings. And they said, be very careful with that word, because the race consciousness common understanding of what charity is very dangerous. What did Henry David Thoreau said? If I knew someone was coming to my house to do me good, I'd run for the hills. When we think that we're bestowing something on somebody else that we have and they don't, it gets dangerous. But the kind of charity that I believe agape love is a stewardship. That we as stewards of the divine life itself want to share that with the world the best way that we can. That's why we have people who endeavor to write beautiful poetry and beautiful music and beautiful works of like books, beautiful classes, these things that people just want to give, you know, they just want to give to you. But that's channeling divine love. That's not something they have and you don't. It's an awakening within us, within our depths, in each other, the knowing of the truth of who we are. And to me, that is agape love. So why can't it just be that simple? It's not that simple. Because sometimes we hate things. Sometimes we want to destroy things or stop things. And so it is in the world of dualism, of life and death and good and bad and light and dark. So Jesus of Nazareth, Jesus who's often called the Christ, which isn't his last name, but it's actually something that he attained, Christ consciousness. This Jesus person is what you could call a guru to many. Some people look at Jesus as a sort of a guru, and what a guru really is somebody who does just what we're talking about, who helps you to find within yourself the truth about you, who doesn't want to give you something that they have and you don't, but who wants to awaken in you divine life and your understanding of the power that lives in you, not from them, but in you. And wasn't that what Jesus did? So in the Ananda tradition and the lineage of Paramahansa Yogananda, there are several gurus in that lineage and several disciples. And one of the disciples of Paramahansa Yogananda was Swami Kriyananda. And Swami Kriyananda founded the Ananda movement. And that's a wonderful thing that's all around. All over the world, there's Ananda centers. And he wrote several books, and one of them was a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. And the Bhagavad Gita, as I've said before, is basically the Hindu Bible. It's kind of like our Bible helps us to live life, and so does this Bible help a different religious path live their life. And they're the same, but they're also very different. So they're very fun. And I tell you all that because in this reading, I was really looking at what Kriyananda was saying as I was considering agape love. And one thing he said was, it's really important to have a guru. Someone to show us, because we get confused. And I know that I do, especially when it comes to loving somebody that I can't stand. It gets very difficult. And so he says it's very important to have a guru that can help you. But if you don't, there's one question that you can ask yourself that will help you to determine if you're on sort of the right track to overcoming. Or we talked about that last week, not overcoming, finding your truth in more and more real ways. So what is this question? He says to ask yourself, will it take me toward greater inner freedom and a sense of having done what was right for me? Will it take me towards greater inner freedom and a sense of that I'm doing what is right for me? Think about that. Because when, okay, I'll think about it for me right here, Kevin. When I'm condemning somebody, is that taking me towards inner freedom? No matter who it is. Because doesn't it constrict me every time? And what about what is right for me? That is a tricky question. If I want to be free inside and I go in my life being right about what I'm right about so that everybody else can be wrong, then I get to be right, but in what world? Is it my little tiny small world that I've created where if I get this, then I'll be happy, but if I don't, then I'll be upset and angry and mad? But if I get this, this is going to make me feel like I've achieved something, only to get it and have it not work. So what ultimately is right for me? And can you see where it gets confusing? I need a guru. Jesus, please help me. So he says, Swami Kriyananda says, the result of frustrated desire is anger. And that's why desire, we think, you know, I don't know, is desire good or bad? Because when I want something and I get it, it's really good. But is it? If I get thwarted, it makes me angry. And if I get angry, then I get off track. And remember that anger, when I get mad about something, it's actually not anger. It's unresolved fear. Fear that I'm not going to get something that I really believe that I need to be okay, or that I'm going to lose something that I've already attained that's bringing me happiness. But fear itself, you remember, maybe you do, is an acronym, and it stands for forgot everything's all right. That we just forgot when we're angry and when we're desiring and not getting our outcomes. I've just forgot that the universe is conspiring in my favor and that everything is working out. That's hard these days. So he says that desire and anger basically lead us into the abyss of fear. So what's the answer then? Do I just stop wanting things? That's not going to happen. So then what is love, this real agape love? And how does it work in my life to maybe temper my desires or help me to desire what is truly right for me in the depths of my soul? And so this Bible verse came along from Corinthians, St. Paul. He's come up a couple times in this lesson. It's a lesson for me. Anyway, Corinthians 13, it says, love is patient, love is kind. Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. Any one of those lines is just tough. If you think about, if I was going to gauge my life, if I'm living in divine love or not, and it says, believes all things, I don't believe that what that person's doing is right. And sometimes it really is glaringly obvious that that's not the right thing to be doing, dude. I mean, we see atrocities in this world. But real love believes all things, it says. And I'm not going to say that this Bible verse is necessarily absolute truth, but when it causes me to look inside of myself and ask, am I being patient? Am I being kind? And what are the results of that? There's a transcendence that becomes possible for me, and maybe you, in the depths of my being sure that I need to do something about what you're doing wrong. And isn't that important in our world today? When you really think about that, our biases, what we want, what we don't want, who we want, who we don't want, what could possibly happen based on how I believe about this person being put in a place where I don't think they should be, can I say to myself, I believe this is working out for a higher good? And if I were to say that, what kind of freedom would that cause within me? And what would it allow me to then do in my life that was different? So I ask myself this question, where in our lives do we fall short of this kind of love? And maybe you can see for yourself. I know this isn't an easy conversation. This is the kind of stuff where we say, I don't really want to deal with this. I just want to feel good. Well, you know, I love my little documentary shows, and I think a lot of us do that do Unity Churches. We love to know how human beings operate. So I came across this little show, and I didn't expect it to be what it was, but it was David Attenborough. And David Attenborough is a fellow who has lived his whole life. You probably know him. He's gone doing all these nature shows and been very immersed in life on planet Earth. In fact, I think he did a show called that. But this particular show is called A Life on Our Planet. And it's not just any life, it's his life. And he's an older man now. I'm not quite sure how old he is, but it was very interesting to see him speaking at his current age, looking back on his entire life, and how he started when he was young, being very passionate about our world and going out into all these remote areas and bringing this awesome footage of the life on our planet. A lot of very, very exotic animals, and he'd interact with them, and he'd be laying around with apes, you know, and all kinds of stuff. And he got to talk about what he sees in the world. And what he's seeing is what a lot of these people are seeing who make documentaries about the Earth. Our Earth is going away, you know. The forests are going away, and all kinds of stuff's happening that we could construe as bad. And so he looks at all this, and he said a very interesting thing, which is why I'm sharing this with you. He said, and they're showing, you know, footage of him being a young man and being with all these animals and enjoying his life with his film crew and flying on planes to these places. And he says, I thought I was doing such awesome things at that time that I was observing how the Earth was. But he said it was all an illusion, because it's all going away now. And that is the strangest thing to hear from a guy like that, because he can't go to the same place and see the same thing. It's gone. The world does that. She comes into being and flourishes, and then she goes into sort of a death, and then back again into life, and then back again into death. The Hindus call it the breath of the Brahman. And the world exists in the space between the inhale and the exhale. Now, that's a weird thing to think about. So what is this divine love that transcends? And for David, you know, he thought that he had a solution. And when he goes around and shows what human beings do on the planet to get stuff, it's shocking. And it doesn't make me proud to be a human being. So do I have a bias about that? And do I want to change that? And do I have to change that for me to be okay? How many activists are there that are desperately trying to change the way things are? And is it good or bad? It doesn't matter when it's in the context of what is right for me. As us, as human beings, we must find what it is that is right for us and then go and do that thing without the condemnation of other people. And isn't that agape love? So Jenny and I, we love just learning more about spirituality. And so I told her, she said, what's your talk going to be on? And I said, agape love. And she said, oh. And all of a sudden, all this stuff arose from the stuff that she studies, which is different from my stuff. And we watched a video about Ananda Mai Ma. And she was a Hindu saint. And Ma came in the world as her own being. And she was always in pure divine bliss. Ananda means bliss. And so perhaps that's where she got her name. That's why a lot of these yogis call themselves some type of the name Ananda, because they're in divine bliss all the time. So Ananda Mai Ma, she went around and blissed out. That was her whole existence. And when you hear people talk about her, how they impacted her by her very presence. She didn't worry about what was happening in the world. She was so connected to God that she could inspire masses of people without doing anything. And that, to me, is what agape love actually is. So one of the things that Jenny brought me was a little book by Megan Watterson, who's a writer, and she writes a lot about Mary Magdalene. And it's just a simple little paragraph that just summed it up so nice. I couldn't even believe she handed it to me. And she says, Mary Magdalene represents the fierce, unwavering love that we all have access to within our own vulnerable hearts. It's a love that renders all things sacred, from the animals to the angels, from the poorest to the most powerful. It's a love that sees the inherent worth of all things. And it's a love that remains even through the darkest times, even through death. Her love is the one that resurrects. Now think about that. All those things that she said, whether you're rich or poor, whether you're the smallest amoeba or the most great creature, it doesn't matter. It's all that important. That's what this mother energy does on the planet. It's so beautiful. And Mary Magdalene was called the apostle to the apostles because she helped us dudes resurrect what was lost within us by her presence, not by what she told us to do. So back to our friend Jesus. In John, he says to the guys, they're trying to figure out how to kill him. They just want to kill Jesus all the time. And they're trying to figure out how to do it, and they start grilling him about some things. And he says, look, I'm going away. You're going to search for me, but where I'm going, you cannot come. Now, why is he saying this to these Pharisee guys? And then he talks about sin. He says, you will die in your sins. Now, sin is an interesting word. We've talked about all the different meanings of it. In I think, the Latin language, sin simply means without. So it's common in their language to use that word in terms of if you want something without something, you say sin means without. So think about that. If they're going to die without, to me what that means is without this agape love, we feel like we're going to die. What does Mary Magdalene say? Even through death. That death can't stop us when we're in agape love because it's eternal. It goes on and on. Like it says in Corinthians, love never ends. You can't kill it or destroy it or even change it. It's pure and whole unto itself. So Jesus said you're going to die with that belief system, that way of perceiving the world, that you're right and somebody else is wrong. And isn't that what these Pharisee guys were always? There's only one way to do it, and it's our way. And if you don't do it, then we're going to, you know, whatever, lock you up or kill you or whatever we're going to do to you. And he just said, that is how you die inside. So then what does he say? You are from below. I am from above. You are of this world. I am not of this world. To me, it's one of the most powerful teachings that Jesus ever gives. And it's what we do when we go into meditation. We close our eyes to that outer world. We come into the inner world, and through the spiritual eye, we see the eternal life. Because in that moment, don't you know it's true? When we get behind time with a song, with the presence of a loved one, we go beyond and we see from that lens of eternal life, which to me is agape love. But ultimately, it doesn't matter. right? It doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter if you're a hedonist and running around just for sense pleasures the rest of your life. But does it? What does it do to the soul nature? There's a quote from A Course in Miracles that really stuck out to me for this particular set of ideas, I guess. And it says simply that delay does not matter in eternity, but it is tragic in time. Isn't that a thought? In eternity, delay doesn't even exist because there's no time. But in time, delay is tragic. Well, why? Well, they say in Course in Miracles, your place is only in eternity, where God himself placed you forever. I want to know more about that. So for me, this whole thing comes down to the simple idea that when we look with true agape love on everything, we see beyond appearances, beyond patterns, beyond the three-dimensional world, beyond the three-dimensional life, beyond our bodies. St. Paul, again in Romans, he says this very famous thing. He says, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. It's why people pray and meditate every day, to renew the mind, to remember, wait a minute, there's one life, and that life is flowing through me. Jesus echoed Paul's idea about being conformed to the pattern of this world when he says, judge not according to the appearance. Now, what if we could apply that to each human being or regime or pocket of humans that gather together or whatever? What if we could apply that? Do not judge by appearances. Because when our human eye sees something, it automatically compares to something that it already knows, called our belief system, and then it categorizes it into good and bad, like and don't like, desire, don't desire. But if we can look beyond all that, clear it away, and look with divine love, which often requires closing the eyes and opening those eyes of the heart, then we're judging not with appearances, but through agape love, unconditional. God, I am not there. It just does not happen for me that every day I'm floating around like Ananda Moyima was. But I believe that by us looking at this together, it gives us the seeds of change that truly make a difference for what is right for you and what is right for me. There's an old Islamic saying. There's another writer, Cynthia Borgol. She's another CAC person. And we found this wonderful article by her. And she puts forward this old Islamic saying that describes it, that depicts God speaking with these words. I was a hidden treasure and I longed to be known. And so I created the worlds visible and invisible. There's this pull that God does, the divine does, that's always pulling us back to itself. She says the divine energetic flow is more like Eros, romantic love, than agape, as mystics of all spiritual traditions have intuitively known. Well, what does that mean? It contradicts Martin Luther King. It's more like romantic love? Well, what does that mean? She says its yearning is palpably felt in our own hearts, with an intensity almost more than we can bear. And then she quotes William Blake, who's one of Christianity's greatest mystics. And he said, we are here on earth a little while to learn to bear the beams of love. Have you ever loved something so much that it hurts? That when you think about losing it, it just rips your heart? And what is beyond that? So she says this interesting thing. The divine alchemical formula. That agape love equals this romantic love that we feel, this true heart love, this human real love, plus something else, kenosis. And kenosis is an emptying out, a complete release of. So she says to get to agape, we must take this love and love with everything in us and let go of all the rest. Because how do I get to agape love from human love? You know, from my biases. And what they're saying here is we must let go of our biases and just love because we love, to feel the pain of too much loving within us and let that be okay. And in that, we must release our condemnations of others, our condemnations of ourselves, which is ultimately what that is, and love the world with all our heart, all our soul, and all our mind. That's what I have today. Thank you. Amen.